This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The president of the United States, according to a recent headline, quote, seeks power to use Russian oligarchs' assets for Ukraine. The story proceeds. United States President Joe Biden requesting from Congress new powers to seize and repurpose Russian oligarch assets. The request is part of a larger funding proposal for aid for the Ukraine. In a statement, the White House described the proposal as, quote, comprehensive legislative package, saying it will, quote, enhance the United States government's authority to hold the Russian government and Russian oligarchs accountable for Putin's war against Ukraine. Among the measures, it goes on, the president has asked legislatures to make it a criminal offense for a person to, quote, knowingly or intentionally possess proceeds directly obtained from corrupt dealings with the Russian government. I mentioned this in the context of the story from Europe these last weeks about the seizing of mega yachts believed to be in the possession of Russian oligarchs. Most recently, Bloomberg, tycoon Abramov's $100 million mega yacht likely racing to Turkey's safe waters. Subhead, Russian tycoons are moving their yachts to thwart sanctions. Subhead, U.S. allies seizing oligarchs' boats and other luxury assets. The name of this particular asset is the Titan. I welcome Richard Epstein, a professor of law at NYU and the University of Chicago, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and the author of a 20th century book, prescient for now 2022, entitled Takings, about the limits and unknowns of the government of the United States seizing private property in all contexts. Richard, a very good evening to you. I understand takings can apply to property in the United States, real estate, but in this instance, it is more colorful to picture it as $100 million yachts and other assets that are the proceeds of, to quote the president's statement, corrupt practices. Is this seeking of additional legislation in Congress seeking to solve what you have raised, which is that the courts do not look with favor on the seizing of private property by the U.S. government? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening. Well, let's just start from the beginning. And the clause reads, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. And the takings in these cases are takings by governments, not by private individuals. And if you're trying to figure out what is covered by this, the word private property is much more comprehensive than the word land or the word real estate. It surely covers all sorts of chattels, that is, things that float and move, as well as lots of forms of intellectual property also receive the protection. So essentially, at the beginning, it looks as though, hey, you've taken this stuff. You've certainly not offered any kind of compensation. And so therefore, what happens is the government either has to pay you or to return the asset. There is, however, two constitutions in the United States. There's one which starts to deal with ordinary assets in times of peace and tranquility. And there's another constitution which seems to apply, although it's not written anywhere, under circumstances in which it turns out there are various kinds of emergencies, some of which may be local financial emergencies on the one hand, and others having to do with foreign affairs, wars, dislocations, and the like. And what the second constitution seems to say, in the eyes of most people, is that the compensation requirements under the first compensation or the first constitution don't apply. To give you an idea of how strong this sentiment is, let me just go back to 1917. And at that particular point in time, Woodrow Wilson, a rather authoritarian president, was trying to figure out how to fight and to furnish the weapons and people for the war in Europe in World War I. And what he did is he took the entire militia and drafted it into the United States Army, which essentially disbanded the thing. It turned out the Supreme Court, by a libertarian justice, Pinckney, said, you know what, I'm not going to do anything to stop this. It's a foreign affairs situation, not one of ours. And then, in effect, he went on to say the draft is perfectly constitutional, even though you're obviously confiscating labor and not giving people their market wages. And the theme behind both of these things is the courts do not get themselves involved in situations which seem to deal with war and peace. So that, in effect, is the kind of the background presumption, the reversal of the one that you might think. He's not going to be caught in this case by trying to do this unilaterally. This is not an executive order from what you said. This is, in fact, an effort to get legislation. So now the next question is, will these cases fall within the legislation? One of the most notorious words in the entire criminal lexicon is the word corruptly. And it sort of indicates that there has to be something underhanded about the way in which you've acquired the assets in question. And, well, that's not perfectly evident that everybody who turns out to be a Russian oligarch has been corrupt. Some of these people have been very skillful. And suppose they're able to show that the asset that they have, the Titan, for example, was acquired because these people made very shrewd investments in the West. And then when they made those investments, they paid off. And when they paid off, they bought themselves the Titan. Does that fall with it? Well, it's going to be then the question of tracing assets. Suppose it turns out, when Russia engaged in its various forms of privatization, remember when they sold off state-run enterprises to private parties, they didn't do it in a sensible way by having competitive bids. What happened is the oligarchs in government gave it to the oligarchs in the market. And so somebody could say that these transactions were corrupt, having nothing to do with the war in Ukraine, but having to do with the situation of giving something to nothing to somebody else. So my own guess about this is that the Russians have come to the same conclusion that I have in this particular environment. They could try Biden court having seized the assets, having had their assets seized, but they'd rather run to Turkey, because if they run to Turkey and they get the safe haven, then they're beyond the jurisdiction of the United States. One very nice problem for you, John, if you want to think about it. Suppose these things are on the high seas and the Americans send a destroyer. And what they do is they tow the thing back to an American port. Is this going to be a form of piracy? Will that, in effect, offend some principle of international law, whatever it may be, so that they won't be able to assert the jurisdiction of the United States? These are interesting times. I'm only a law professor. And I can say that, you know, privacy was a very important issue back at the time of the revolution, and it may well be becoming one today.
This is the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. Yes. I believe that it has the takings clause in it. Has
the
it,
end clause.
To your knowledge, you know, sweeping over history, you started in, most helpfully in 1917. Has the presidency of any time between Woodrow Wilson and now used it to punish foreign nationals during a conflict? Was it used against, for example, Chinese assets during the Korean War, or Vietnamese assets during the Vietnam War? Or even most recently, was it used against Iraq during the Iraq War? Or has it been used against Iran to seize property? I know that there's a building in Manhattan that's said to be in dispute between the U.S. and Iran, because of charges by people whose losses were during acts of terror. Is that all part of this thinking about what you can take and what you have to compensate for?
Look, it's even wackier than that. Remember, under the Obama administration, when they were engaged in various kinds of nuclear preparations, the issue wasn't how much we could take from them. The issue was how much we were going to pay them in order to buy them out from the particular activities in question. And there's certainly been stories that hundreds of millions of dollars were transferred in small bills and in small shipments to the Iranians in order to try to placate them. And so when you're dealing with the international stuff and you think of it as a kind of a Hobbesian war of all against war, you're not even sure which way the money is going to go, whether it's going to be by ways of bribes or way of extortion. So it's a free, open game. Generally speaking, when you do have foreign nations and their enemy aliens, what you do, in effect, is you freeze the assets during the period, right, of which the conflict is. And then when the conflict is over, the general practice is to return them to the people who are their rightful owners. We're not trying to seize these ships, which are not government property anyhow. We're not pleading that these guys were in cahoots with anything that actually was pre-ordered. For all we know, every one of these oligarchs was deeply afraid of this particular situation because they knew it would only bring hell coming down upon their shoulders. But the correct answer would be that you could hold the assets if you thought that they were somehow related to any enemy alien property, but that you cannot dispose of them. Now, the second question is, what do we use it for? Well, one of the things you could say is you could see these assets and you could put them into the general treasury. Another thing you would say is we seize the asset and we're going to use them for this specific war. I don't think it's much of a difference because the money turns out to be fungible. Unless what they're thinking of doing is taking these boats, refitting them, and then turning them into military vessels for conference. I don't think that's really very likely. I mean, I don't know how you take a luxury ship and turn it into a barracks, but they did it with the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth during World War II. They became troop ships going back and forth. I think, in effect, what happens is you're in a law-free zone at this particular point in time. If history is any guide, Because what will happen is if you try to get into court, even before you get to all these takings questions, and I should have mentioned this earlier, there is something known as the political question doctrine, which says if certain issues are committed by the Constitution to the political branches of the government, and we understand that's the case, the courts will not get themselves involved. So if the United States Congress decides to authorize various kinds of use of weapons overseas, whether in Vietnam or Korea or anywhere else, that's a political question. And the courts won't say, oh, it's beyond the power of the legislature to do this or beyond the power of the president to particularly act. So in addition to all of the substantive issues that you have, there's just a real question as to whether or not when you want to knock on the door, there's going to be anybody there who's going to be willing to answer this particular question. So I think what you have to say, it's something of a free-for-all. And, you know, there won't be very much sentiment out there in favor of Mr. Putin and his buddies, because I think the war in the Ukraine has degenerated into a kind of series of terrorist actions by the Russian governments against civilians. If you recall when they started this thing, they said they were only going after military targets.
Right.
Well, they said that because they thought they'd be in Kiev within 3 days. But they weren't. And in fact, it turns out the Russians are incredibly inept in the way in which they run their military affairs in here and everywhere else. And so they decided to bomb everybody. The real question is, can anybody hold them to account for reparations after this thing is done? And that, too, will be a very political
question. Is it significant that in addition to talking about corrupt practices, which, of course, is in the eye of the beholder, it mentions that they're seeking, the president's initiative is seeking to ask Congress to double the statute of limitations for foreign money laundering to 10 years and expand the definition of, quote, racketeering under U.S. law to include efforts to evade sanctions, such as a fleeing yacht, and allow the federal government to use the proceeds from selling the assets of sanctioned oligarchs to help the people of Ukraine. Is criminality helpful in seizing property? They do that on drug lords routinely.
Absolutely. To the extent that you make that this isn't a criminal case, it turns out that the powers to move expeditiously are going to be much greater than if you think this is some kind of a civil forfeiture, where the powers are also extremely great. There have been many, many cases which have asked the question as to whether or not when you extend the statute of limitations, that is a taking. There are two cases to be distinguished. One is the statute of limitations has already run and it's supposed to supply repose. And then you lift it so that people can now sue again. That's been done fairly successfully in cases in which they're going after churches for sexual abuse by some of their priests in terms of their relationship with their customers or that with their parishioners. I think it's likely that something like this will happen here. And it will essentially, even if the statute of limitations is run, reopen it again. I think keeping it open with respect to cases that have yet to be brought where the statute hasn't run, this is going to be regarded as part of the ordinary business of the government. And there's going to be no way that they're going to be able to make a takings claim on that. Expanding definitions of laundering and so forth. This has been a topic which has gone on for many, many years. Ed Meese, after he left the Attorney General's office right under Reagan, has made a large sort of public campaign, a fairly effective one in my view, attacking the overcriminalization that have taken place through the judicial system. And exactly this charge will be raised against this particular activity. And the response will be what it has always been before. New necessities require new laws. And so therefore, what you can't do is stop it. I think, in effect, if this thing goes through, it will be extremely difficult for anybody to stop anything in a judicial situation. When we say it's a political question and the courts are not involved, in the United States, we actually mean that. And to the extent that we mean that, it seems to me that the oligarchs are going to be in trouble. The worries that you have will become very different, John, if it turns out that when you bring in the undertow, as these boats go out to sea, are Americans who are to some extent involved in this. So suppose you were a company which gave gas to a boat that on American soil, which is going to try to flee to Turkey. Could somebody seize your assets on the grounds that you're aiding and abetting some kind of a criminal activity? And I suspect that, you know, in theory, those activities are certainly caught by the criminal law, but it's going to be a matter of entirely different political complexion if you're going after people in the United States who do this as an ordinary part of their business. To which the answer is, because there's always an answer in this area, somebody said it can't be an ordinary kind of business if you know that these are Russian oligarchs And then somebody's going to say, but I didn't sell it to them directly. There was this boat that just put in a very large order for fuel, and I gave it to them. And the question is, were you under notice that it had to be going to an oligarch because it was such an unconventional deal? I mean, you can spin these stories out for a long period of time. There is no concept which is so innocent that if you give me a few minutes, I can't figure out how to make a complete mess.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution commenting on Russian billionaires. We're going to turn to an American billionaire next. Much in the news. We're billionaire choristers. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.